if we attempt to do something, or if we need to do something, it's our duty, right? But if we are not able to achieve that, then we feel we have failed, right? Are you also first time here? First time you came in the mega event, did you?
Yes.
Yes. Good memory, Haruka. Sometimes we'll be welcome. So sometimes we feel that this is my duty. I need to perform this. And if I'm unable to do that, we feel that it's a failure on our part. Example, we feel that it's duty of each one of us to take care of our parents, correct? But sometimes because of circumstances, we are not able to do it. So we need to do something, our duty, but then we feel as a failure of not being able to do that, correct? Sometimes we have desire. It may not be our duty, but I just have desire to help somebody. But every time it may not be possible to stretch yourself enough to help others, right? And that time again, we feel it was a failure that I couldn't do what I wanted to do. And third is, sometimes you have a duty or you might have desire. You start doing it, but you are not able to achieve what you wanted to achieve on the way also. And then you feel that, oh, I tried, but I failed. Same thing also applies to God, that sometimes we feel it's His duty to protect us, it's His duty to provide, but maybe is He failing? Why there are children, where there are people, those who do not have one-time food also for themselves, is He not able to do His duty to provide them? Whether He wants to do but He cannot do, or whether He's trying but maybe He's unable to do. So these are the questions which come to our mind, so we'll go over it. Okay, very simple basic definition of God. G-O-D, generator, operator, and destroyer, right? In Vedic scriptures, he's defined as combination of Brahma, Mahesh, and Vishnu, and Shiva or Mahesh, right? Brahma is his expansion, which creates, correct? So he's generator. In Bhagavad Gita, in 10.8, in 9.10, so many places he says that I am the seed-giving father of everyone. God is the one from whom everything comes. And everything finally goes back to Him. Okay? It is God who is saying. It's Krishna who is saying. Not only that, even Lord Brahma, in his prayers, what he says? He is Sarva Karana Karanam. He is the causes of all causes. Right? And so many different scriptures, again and again, it is mentioned that the God is one from which everything emanates. So he is the generator. He is the one who maintains everything. I'm sure all of us have this experience in life that if you want to make something, or if you want to get a project done, getting to something is difficult, but maintaining that is still further difficult. Example, a relationship. Getting into relationship, not easy, but maintaining it, more difficult. You all agree? Right? Maintaining is more difficult than creating. Right? Making a building might take 2 years, 3 years, building is done, okay. But then to maintain it in good condition all the time, I'm just giving you very crude examples, is more difficult. And that is why Lord in His most potent form as Vishnu does it Himself. He maintains. And last is destroyer. He does destruction through the agency of, or through the expansion of Lord Shiva, right? Lord Shiva is His expansion. But then he uses Lord Shiva to finally destroy everything at the time of annihilation. Okay, so we expect that God, who is generator, operator, he creates, he maintains, then why, how can he fail? He looks like most powerful personality, then why should he fail, right? We all also call Lord in the, by the name Bhagavan. What do you mean by Bhagavan? What is the definition of Bhagavan? If I say somebody is Saundaryavan, what does it mean? Yes, having beauty. So van, that word means possesses Saundarya, is beauty. One who possesses beauty. Bhagyavan, somebody who is possessing good fortune. Not Bhagyavan means, are Bhagyavan, matlab wife, not like that. Huh? In early times, they used to call wife by, wife used to call husband, Aji sunte ho, right? And wife used to call and husband used to call wife Are Bhagyavan, because he used to always think that because she is married to me, she is the most fortunate. Okay, so Lord is called as Bhagavan. Bhaga means What does it mean? That he is the one who possesses bhaga. What does the word bhaga means? Opulences, right? We all know the word bhagava. If somebody who wears bhagava vastra, that is saffron. What does it indicate? Renunciation. You have given up. So one who has bhagava, va is one who has given up, renounced, bhaga is all opulences. So bhaga word comes from opulences. And Lord is called Bhagavan. Very commonly we call him Bhagavan, right? And what does it mean? Parashar Muni defines in this shloka, which is given in Vishnu Puran. We all discussed this shloka in our last Bhagavad Gita reading, right? That he is the one who is called Aishwaryasya Samagrasya, Virasya Yasya Shriya, Jnana Vairagyo Chaiva, Sannam Bhaga Itimara. He has six opulences in completeness. That is important. He is the most Aishwarya, wealthy. He is Virasya, he is most powerful. Yasa, he is the most famous. Shriya, beauty, knowledge. Vairagya, renunciation. He has everything in complete. He is most beautiful, he is most wealthy, he is most powerful, he is most famous, most knowledgeable, and most renounced. There might be people whom we come across, they are very, very wealthy. But if you look at their face, they might not be very attractive. They might not have all the knowledge. Somebody may be very knowledgeable, but then they don't have enough money. Right? And somebody might have money, somebody might have, that person might have knowledge, that person may be beautiful, but then they are not renounced. Correct? Automatically, all these things is going to make you attached. But Lord has even renunciation incomplete. And this renunciation can give the effect what we are going to see now. Okay? Lord is also called as Achyuta. And Achyuta means infallible. Infallible word means one who cannot fail. One who cannot fail. And now we are going to talk, yes, if he can fail, how? Okay? So we are going to redefine the definition of Achyuta. Okay. So let's go over some of the instances where he seems to fail in what he needs to do or what he desired to do or maybe what he attempted to do. Okay. So any instance which you can think of when you think that Lord wanted to do something but he couldn't do it. Very fail. Yes.
I think I did a case of Lord Ram.
Yeah.
He had a very painful life.
Correct.
Even because of Lord, even his own life was not very
so-called complete smooth.
Yeah.
Correct.
So I think he himself failed himself.
Correct. Anything else? Any other places? We'll talk about this also when we go ahead. Any other place? Okay, I'll give you a hint of one pastime which I'm looking at. Before Kurukshetra war, Lord failed. Yes.
Shanti,
as a peace messenger, correct. He went to
Hastinapur
to talk to Kauravas, Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. And he said that on behalf of Pandavas, I'm coming and giving you, negotiating that let's not have this big war which can involve, I think people want to come. He had desire that let's not have the war, and so was the desire of Yudhishthira and Pandavas. Not all the Pandavas. Bhima did not want any peace anyways. He wanted to actually fight and wanted to kill. But in benefit of full humanity, they decided that maybe it is good to stop the war. And that's why Krishna went as a peace messenger to Duryodhana and asked that just give five small villages. These five brothers will rule over these five villages. And then they will be happy. Because finally they are king. They cannot beg. They cannot do business. They have to have something small area at least to rule over. And you can keep complete big Hastinapur. But what happened? Before Duryodhana refused. Correct. So that brings us to his first failure. The Lord failed to make peace before Kurukshetra war. He wanted to go and convince Duryodhana not to have war. But he failed. Seemingly he failed. And the reason is Duryodhana did not cooperate. And this brings us to first reason in life. If God fails, it's because of our desire not to cooperate. Lord is always here to help us, to bring us to something higher, right? But if we do not want to cooperate, he's not going to pull us to it. One day we will be pulled down. That is a different thing. But he loves us so much that he gives us minute independence. And that is what is called as desire. Right? If a child, now all of us are in that age, you know, like or maybe little younger age than when we all are there at teenage, the parents will tell you, do this, but they're not going to force you to do that, right? Till they're school going children, they will be forced to do what the parents think, right? But once you are grown up, then they think, the parents think that now they're intelligent enough to take their own decision. They will guide the children, but they will not force them. Is it correct? It's out of what? It's out of their love. As a human being, we are mature enough, our species is grown up enough that Lord do not need to pull us or force down his desires on us. Because of his love, he gives us little independence. I'll tell you what is right, what is wrong. Finally, you decide what you want to do. And that is exactly what he did to Arjuna. He spoke the entire Bhagavad Gita for 45 minutes in the Kurukshetra battlefield. And at the end, what did he say? Do as you like. He did not say, now I have spoken to you enough. Now at least your intelligence is... Dimaki batti jali ki nahi jali, huh? Whether now at least you have intelligence, now to at least go ahead to understand what I'm telling you to do. No. He told, do as you do, as you wish. Right? So this is the desire or the minute independence what God gives to each one of us. If we decide not to cooperate with his plans or his advice, the choice is up to us. And then it's on our part finally to make God fail. So see how potent we can be. We are small jivas, but we can make this huge, the supreme personality also fail if we decide not to cooperate with him. One thing is there that God will give us chance to take a good decision or a right decision. 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 100 times. One day will come when he will say, no more. You remember any such example?
Shishupal.
100%. Right? Yes. Shishupal was actually his cousin only. And he knew that from beginning he was so envious, he was always wanted to tell bad words. He said, okay, never mind, I'll forgive you. You can decide what you want to do. If you want to give bad words to me, you can give bad words to me. I will just tolerate. But how many times? 99. 100th time when you speak, that is your last day. But Shishupal did not learn his lessons after 99 times. And 100th time, finally, he was killed. That was in Rajasuya Yagna. Right? This is what happens. Lord gives all of us also chance. But if we continue to be like this, right? Mistake and again and again and again. That is willingly done. Shishupal knew this is 99 times over. Anymore, I'm gone. But he did not use his intelligence. So if we do not use our intelligence, then Lord will not be left a choice. And finally, he has to bring us down. So either it will be gracefully we accept Lord's opinion, what is good for us, or it will be forcibly put down to us one day. Next, as, what is the name, Prabhu?
Prabhu.
Sorry?
Prabhu.
Vaibhav. Okay. As Vaibhav Prabhu said, Ramayana. One of the things which strikingly people talk about is that how the Mother Sita, in spite of being wife of the Lord himself, was abducted and Lord failed to protect his own wife. If the Lord cannot protect his wife, what is he going to protect us? This is very common. I have heard people asking, apni wife ko to bachaya nahi, abhi humko kya bachayenge? And this is the reason for people not to have faith in God's protection. But all of us know why and what happened. Correct? For those who don't know, or for those how the acharyas explain, that Sita represents a jiva or any one of us. Lord loves Sita, so does he. Does he loves us? He always wants to protect us. He always wants to protect all dependent jivas who depend on him, exactly like how he wanted to protect Sita. So before leaving that place, actually to fulfill the desire of Sita, he was going, right? He was not going to enjoy himself. But when he went to fulfill the desire of that jiva, Sita, still out of his love for that jiva, what did he do? He asked Lakshman. He left Lakshman to take care of her. Not only that, when he went and when Lakshman was protecting, when the Mayavi demon, when he was shouting Marichi, right? Hey Lakshman, come and help me. Come and Lakshman knew this is not the voice of my brother. He cannot be endangered. He did not want to leave. What was the first thing Sita did? Sita started accusing Lakshman that you have wrong intention on me. You want to enjoy me. You have all wrong, and definitely that is why you don't want to go and help your brother so that he's killed. So first thing she did was she doubted the intention and integrity of Lakshman, who was left for her protection. So she started offending him. Never mind. Lakshman still was tolerant. And when he finally decided to go to help and look out for Ram, he drew that Lakshman Rekha to protect Sita. That, okay, now I'm telling you, I'll go according to your desire again to protect her, but protect Lord, help Lord Ram, but you don't cross this line. Correct? What happened? Ravana came. The demon came in form of? He came in the form of a sadhu, a brahmana, to beg. And then he made her cross the Lakshman Rekha and come out. And that is the time when she was finally abducted. Right? We all know this. The stories most of us know. But the purpose is very important. We are no less than Jiva like Sita. Lord always sends messengers, his very dear devotees, to protect us. They are like pure devotees or spiritual masters. They are there for us, to help us, to guide us. But what do? We offend them. We start doubting whether he is right or wrong, whether he has some selfish motivation or not, whether he wants to say correctly or not. So first thing we do is we doubt and we offend pure devotees. And secondly, when they give us instruction, do this, don't do this, then what do? We don't want to follow it. Why should I follow? I'm independent. I can do my things. Right? So, the reason Sita was finally abducted was that she first was offended Lakshmana like a pure devotee, and secondly, she transgressed the instruction given by Lakshmana. If we, Jiva, will do this, if we do not understand that Lord loves us and He is always providing us protection, if we do not have the faith, we will doubt His messengers. And when He sends His messengers, we doubt them. Next thing we do is offend them. When we offend them and we do not follow the instructions, misfortune is obvious to follow. And then we will say, Lord, fail to protect me. But what did I do to reciprocate with the Lord's protection when He wanted to give me? And then we will say, oh, Lord did not protect, but He has given us enough ways to do. Simple example. When tsunami happens, people say, Lord has failed. Lord did not do His duty. Are we doing duty as our children, as His children? Just because we are strong, just because we are externally more potent, we go and kill and sport around all those animals which are silent, it is not something very heinous to do, right? And when it gets back to us, we say, Lord has failed. But it starts where? Us. When a Jiva will not listen to the instructions which comes through Lord or His devotees and finally starts disobeying them, finally we make Lord to fail in what? Protecting us. Everybody knows this pastime. I think this pastime we can talk because everybody may not know. Once one of the very great mystic and very powerful sage named Durvasa, he ran to Lord Vishnu and told him, Trahima, O Achyuta, protect me, O Achyuta. Please take care of me. I need your help. And Lord said, S-O-R-R-Y, sorry. I fail. I will not be able to. What is this Lord who cannot protect His devotee? He is a big sage, he is a big mystic, powerful yogi. And he says, he's not a demon. Demons, if Lord doesn't protect, we can understand. He is a sage. Why he was not protected? To understand that, we go into the small pastime of King Ambarish. King Ambarish was a very, very pious. Anybody here who doesn't know about King Ambarish pastime? But everybody knows. Yes, of you may not know. Okay. This King Ambarish, he was a very, very pious and very nice king. He was ruling almost, it described that he was ruling the seven islands of the earth. It means entire earth at that time. He was the son of king called King Nabhaga. And he was very pious. And it is described in way detail that he used to use his eyes for only seeing the beautiful form of the Lord. He would use his nose only for smelling the incense which was offered to the Lord. He would always use his hands to wash the temples of the Lord. And everything, whatever he would do, it's completely described that was in service of the Lord. He was ruling his kingdom so well that entire subjects of his kingdom were very pious and very happy. In spite of being such a successful king, he never took credit to himself. Whatever he got, every time he told that Lord is a supreme king and he would do it as a service to the Lord. And out of his love, when Lord saw his amazingly exemplary life, Lord gave his own Sudarshan Chakra to protect him, which would always protect Ambarish Maharaj. One day, or one time actually, King Ambarish with his chaste wife, they started following Ekadashi Vrata, and then they would fast on Ekadashi for entire 1 year. And when it was getting over, the 1 year was getting over, they fasted without water for 3 days continuously. And at the end of the 3 days, when they were supposed to break the fast, now those who follow this Vrata, it's given in scriptures that there is a particular time zone given. And you should try and break your fast during that time so that you get the maximum benefit out of it. And he was doing these austerities for benefit of his entire subject. He did not want anything for himself. He was telling Lord that let me do all these austerities and whatever good comes from it, please let entire my subjects, all my subjects should get the benefit out of it. And with all good intentions, when he was just going to finish off his vrata, his austerity, he asked for all the brahmanas and everybody, he fed them, he gave them all the gifts, he satisfied everybody, he fed them. And then when everybody was satisfied, then he himself was going to now break his fast. When he was going to just sit and start to break his fast after 3 days of fasting, this sage, Durvasa, mysteriously appears there as a guest, uninvited guest. And obviously being a sage, he was very well received by King Ambarish. He welcomed him, he washed his feet, he asked him, he garlanded him, and then he told him that, please, I have fed so many brahmanas, but you are one of the greatest of sages, and I would like to feed you also. So please accept my invitation to have meal with us, prasadam with us. Durvasa was very happy. Yes, yes, I am ready. But before that, I need to go and take bath in Yamuna, which is just flowing close by. So he said, okay, never mind, you go take bath and I will wait. When the guest comes to our house, we are supposed to feed them first before we eat. So King Ambarish was waiting for Durvasa Muni to come back. And Durvasa Muni in his own way, very happily went. He was taking bath in Yamuna and then he went into trance and he was meditating on impersonal Brahman. And he forgot of the time. And the time was going. He was happily meditating. Okay. And here the time is passing by. And when it is coming to the end of the time, when Ambarish Maharaj had to break the fast, he was in dilemma. Whether to break the fast before feeding Durvasa or not to break the fast. Due to his intelligence, he decided with the consensus of the brahmanas there that anyhow he had done waterless fast, complete nirjalam. So if he just takes a very little amount of water, he's breaking his fast, but he's not eating anything, so it's not breaking his fast. And everybody said that this is a good way to do, that you just drink a little of, sip a little bit of water, and then you wait till he comes back. So you get the benefit of doing everything and use it for the service of entire humanity, but you are not transgressing the etiquette that you have not fed him. So he just sipped some amount of water and he continued waiting. Later when Durvasa came, out of his mystic power, he realized what has happened. And he felt very, very insulted. he felt that what type of a host is this who couldn't even wait for me to come back. And he was so hungry, he was so thirsty that he wanted to eat himself first, he wanted to drink himself first, and he was very, very rageous, very upset. And without thinking a second time, he plucked out some hairs from the head, he threw it on the ground, and a very fiery demon appeared there with the intention of killing Maharaj Amrish. Now, if something happens like this to us, what will we do? What we will do? We will say, hello, excuse me, wait what I've done. Correct? Now, we will give explanation. Firstly, you went into trance. Right? I was waiting. And now, so I just had water. I did not eat. Don't you think this is enough? Right? And otherwise, second thing is, looking at the fearful demon who is coming towards you, we'll start running. We'll start giving bad words or curse to Durvasa Muni and then start running to save our life, right? Amrish Maharaj did not do anything. He just stood there without even flinching, having any fear even for a second. He started immediately praying to the Lord, whatever you wish will happen, why should I be bothered? I will just continue to pray. And he continued to pray to the Lord. And what came to the assistance or to protect the Amrish Maharaj? Sudarshan Chakra. Because Sudarshan Chakra was always there, sent by Lord Vishnu. Sudarshan Chakra came, which is the disc of Lord, which was always there with Amrish Maharaj's protection. It came, it killed this demon, and next it started running after the cause of this demon. That was Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni realized, oh shit, what have I done? I wanted to kill Amrish Maharaj, but now now my life is endangered. So he started running. He went into every nook and corner of the entire world. He went under the water in the sea. He wanted in the caves. He went into on the ocean, on the mountains. But he just realized that the Sudarshan was just behind him and burning his back. And he knew that any moment my life is gone. Finally, he went and ran to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is the generative creator. One of the biggest of demigods, right? He said, at least Brahma can protect me. Brahma said, sorry, the door is there. Please go away. Because if you are here, if the Sudarshan comes here, my Brahma Loka also will start feeling burning. No, please go away. Patli gali se nikal jao. Right? It was not enough. He went to Lord Shiva. He started praising and praying to Lord Shiva that you can destroy anything. Why don't you destroy the Sudarshan Chakra? Lord said, Shiva said, sorry. Including Brahma and all the demigods, we fall at the feet of Vishnu. He is the supreme personality of Godhead and we are just his instruments of whatever he desires. Sudarshan is no way anywhere what we can do anything. If you want to have any help, only one person can help, Vishnu. It is his Sudarshan Chakra finally. So please go to Vishnu. So finally he came running, fell at the feet of Vishnu. And that is a time when he comes and tells, oh Achyuta, oh infallible one, you never fail to protect your devotees. I know I have offended King Amrish, but please protect me this time. And I want to read to you what did Lord told him. Very beautiful sentences the Lord tells. Okay? Durvasa Muni says, oh infallible, unlimited Lord, protector of the entire universe, you are the only desirable objective of all devotees. I know I am a great offender, but please give me protection. And the wise Lord says, I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, I sit in the course of their heart. What to speak of my devotee? Even those who are devotees of my devotee are very dear to me. He continues, as chaste woman brings their gentle husband under control by service, the poor devotees who are completely attached to me in the core of their heart bring me under their full control. The pure devotee is always within core of my heart and I am always in the heart of pure devotees. They do not know anything else but me and I do not know anything else but them. So, let me now advise you for your own protection. Please hear from me. By offending Maharaj Amrish, you have acted with self-envy. Therefore, you should go to him immediately without a moment's delay. One's so-called prowess, when employed against a devotee, certainly harms he who employs it. Thus, it is the subject and not the object which is harmed. So, we get the lesson. The Lord becomes helpless when his devotee is offended. He says, I'm independent. I'm not independent. I'm completely helpless. Because you have offended my devotee, I'm sorry. Even if I want, I cannot help you. And this is what is Lord's stand. One of the very pure devotee of Lord was born in Bengal, Narottam Das Thakur. In one of the prayers to Lord's devotee, he sings, Hari sthane aparahe, tare hari na, toma sthane aparahe, nahi paritra. Bengali, right? You understand?
Yeah.
Can you translate for me?
It's quite fast.
If you offend Lord Hari, there is always Harinam to protect you for the prajita. But if you offend the Lord, offend you, the devotee, there's nothing to do.
There is nothing to help you. This is what is very important for us to understand. That if you offend Lord, we can chant his name and we will be delivered. But you offend a devotee of the Lord, there is no scope. Why? Why? Lord tells himself in different Puranas that I am controlled by my devotees. I am subservient to my devotees. And if somebody offends a devotee, it comes from controlling mentality. If I can offend you, it means I am trying to control you. So Lord says, you are trying to control those who are controlling me, I cannot. And that's why Lord feels more offended when a devotee is offended. So very important in our lives. If we offend a devotee, Lord will say, I fail. I don't mind saying I fail, but please go away. I cannot help you. So if we do not want Lord to fail in protecting us, never, never, never offend a devotee. Okay? So here in the picture, very nicely you see that finally he comes and begs. So this is what happens at the last. Amrish Maharaj is waiting because he knew that this person has gone and I need to still serve him. And by the time the Durvasa Muni comes back, 1 year has passed in this earth lok, earth planet. And entire 1 year, King Amrish keeps fasting, only drinking water, waiting for feeding Durvasa Muni first before him, before he eats. This is what is the tolerance and qualities of a devotee. And when Durvasa Muni came back, that time King Amrish, understanding the situation, he tells Sudarshan that if you feel I have done anything good in my life, if I have any pious credits in my life, I give it away to you to protect this Brahmana. Please release him. Will we do that? This person wanted to kill me. Will I give away my pious credit to save him? I'm sorry. But this is the quality of a pure devotee. And that is why Lord loves pure devotees. Right? So you should never offend them. And that's what he is telling Sudarshan Chakra, that please go away and forgive him. Okay, one more thing. Lord sometimes fails to keep his own words. In Ramayana, we hear again and again. Raghukula Neeti Sadachariyai Prana Jaya Par Vachana Jaya. That this is the norm or this is the principle which is followed in Lord Ram's dynasty. If you have to leave your body, it's okay. But you cannot not follow what word has come out of your mouth. Right? And this is what we also hear sometimes. You know, like you ask the soldiers who are fighting in the Kshatriya mood, they will say, Sar Katta Sakte Hai Lekin Sar Jhuka Sakte Hai. Right? So they say we will get our head beheaded, but we will never fall down in front of the enemies. Right? So, Lord also took a vow before Kurukshetra. Krishna had taken a vow that I will not take a weapon. Right? But he finally took the weapon. He broke his vow. Right? When did he broke his vow? What was the situation?
Yeah. When Arjuna was fighting Bhishma Pitama, that time the little bit of Maya and the weakness in Arjuna's heart, as Bhishma Pitama was his very favorite, it could not make him do his karma in a perfect manner. So Krishna felt that he was not doing his karma up to the mark. And for the establishment of dharma, Bhishma Pitama had to die because he was the only wall between dharma prevailing in Kurukshetra war. Hence, he got offended by Arjuna and saying that if you are not going to do it, I am the Lord, I have made my promise, but it's okay. The prevailing dharma is the ultimate aim for anything in this universe.
So
if you cannot kill Bhishma, I will kill Bhishma, and he gets down from the chariot and he takes out his Sudarshan Chakra again.
There is extra thing also to this, what you said is correct. That dharma, Arjuna, because of whatever his attachment, he was not able to fight enough Bhishma. But Bhishma had given his promise to Duryodhana that today, on today's day, either I will kill the Pandavas, headed first by Arjuna, or I will make Krishna break his vow. I will make him take the weapon. One of the two things I will do. So there was one side, the vow of Bhishma. Either I will kill Arjuna or Krishna has to pick up a weapon. Second side, because of his vow, Bhishma was that day fighting so heroically that Arjuna just couldn't stand him. Actually speaking, Arjuna was obviously a great archer, but he was nothing in compared to Bhishma. Bhishma was a greater archer or better warrior. And that's why Arjuna was finally failing in front of him. So Krishna had to do two things. Protect Arjuna and also protect the vow of Bhishma. Both are his devotees. So finally, he had to decide my vow against Arjuna's life and Bhishma's vow. Right? And whenever it comes to, should I take my vow more important or others' devotees' vow? Krishna says, Mera vow gaya bhad mein. I don't care what happens to my vow. I have to protect the life of my devotee, not only that, the vow of my devotee Bhishma. And that is why, to please Bhishma, he picked up the wheel that day and finally pleased Bhishma. And as soon as he picked up the wheel, Bhishma said, my vow is fulfilled, I give up. And then only he was completely killed. Or I wouldn't say killed, he was finally pierced by the arrows of Arjuna. So, same thing. Krishna says, if I break my vow, my name will be spoiled. If Bhishma's vow is gone, his name will be spoiled. If somebody's name has to be saved, that my devotee's name and fame to be saved. If my name gets defamed, I don't care. This is where we learn the quality of renunciation. Lord is complete in six opulences we heard in the beginning, right? He's most wealthy, he's most beautiful, knowledgeable, strong. He is also most renounced, right? He is telling in Bhagavad Gita again and again, be equipoised in failure or success, in name or defaming. Can we do that? Very difficult for us. We so many times feel, what if others think bad about me? My name will be spoiled. Because of this social pressure, because of this society's pressure, how much do we compromise on our own desires or things what we want to do? Because we have so much of other expectations of others to fulfill. Correct? But Lord is, I am not attached. I am defamed or I am famous. No difference to me. His priority is only one in life. And what is his priority? Protecting his devotee and his words, not his own. So he is ready to become infamous and be called tomorrow that who will, like today, anybody can tell, right? That he told, I will not take the weapon, but he took the weapon. It means that his word has no meaning. Krishna's word has no meaning. He doesn't keep his words. Right? So people now have all the reasons not to believe his words. But he doesn't care for it. Because what he cares is carrying the words of his devotees, protecting them and protecting the devotees. So he gives up his own fame and name. This is his renunciation. Okay. Anybody knows about Jarasandha? Yes. Anybody else knows about Jarasandha? Yes, Prabhupada. I'll give him chance now.
Sure.
Tell him.
is the father-in-law of Kamsa.
Correct.
And he was angry with Kamsa's dad. He was trying to attack Madhura. So he war with Krishna.
Yeah. And what did Krishna do?
One time he ran away.
He ran away. When Krishna killed finally Kamsa's two wives, who were the daughter of Jarasandha, obviously they became widow. And Jarasandha was very upset that how can he make my daughter's widow? It's very painful to him. So he immediately attacked Mathura. And that time, Krishna and Balram were in Mathura, they fled away. Right? They fled from there, saving their own life. It was like as if they are running away from the battlefield to save their own life. Right? And just now I said, what do the general Kshatriya mentality is? Sar kata sakte hai lekin sar chuka sakte hai. He also had no reason to run away and get spoil his name. But what he is called as now? Ranchod. Ranchod. Rana means battlefield. And chod means one who ran away, one who fled from there. Right? So, anytime we feel that if my name gets spoiled, I better do it. Die, but must do it, right? I see it many times in our department also. Die, must do, right? Because our name has to be shining. We cannot, sometimes at night, so much we are struggling to do a project. Somehow we have to do it because otherwise my name will get spoiled, right? Krishna says, I don't care. Why did he run away?
To protect his subjects.
Of Mathura. To protect the subjects of Mathura, he knew that they are innocent. They have been suffering because of Kamsa for years and years. And now when Kamsa has died, it's a time for them to be a little peaceful in life. And this Jarasandha makes their life again disturbing them. I might as well go away from here. When I run away from here, he's not going to attack Mathura. And after that, he went away to
Dwarka.
So, for him, protecting the Mathura Vasis, his devotees staying in Mathura, was more important than even being called as Ranchod. But this is what is the glory of the Lord. If we will run away, we will be called coward. But when Lord calls away, when he runs away, he is celebrated as Ranchod. Where he is called as Ranchod? Where is his temple?
Dwarkadish
is Dakor. Ranchod is Dakor. We go to Dakor. In the morning, all the devotees are chanting loudly, Ranchod Rai Ki Jai, Ranchod Rai Ki Jai, like that. This is what his Lord celebrated is. Okay, just short summary. Sometimes we feel that he failed to protect his devotee Jatayu. He couldn't save the life of Bhishma. He couldn't save life of Vritrasur, who was also actually a devotee of Lord at heart. This is Madan Ladini. Some of you might have heard about Mother Lagini. She was Prabhupada's disciple and she was also shot dead and she was not protected. And sometimes we feel that those who are devotee at heart, why does it not protect them? Does he fail to protect his devotees also? Then what is the point in becoming devotee? Our demons are killed, okay. Devotees also are killed, then what is the point?
Because each one has to finish his own quota of Papa and Punya.
And each one also has to die.
So even God is helpless in front of your karma.
Yes. He can help us, but he will never wipe off the karma. First thing he does is, he uses his devotees to teach to the entire world. Okay? As soon as you become devotee, do not expect the life is going to become golden or the bed of red rose petals spread on the... It is not going to happen like that. He will bring mental difficulties in the life, which anyhow are going to come anyways. But when the Lord is there, when we take shelter of the Lord, what happens? He brings us to it. He brings us through it. He is there with us at every step when we have taken shelter of Him. Death is going to come to everybody. May it be Mother Ladini or may it be Bhishma. Everybody has to die. More important is a glorious death. Anybody will have to do anything to have a death like Bhishma might as well have it. Lord came on the last day of Bhishma to come in front of him and he gave his darshan and fixed on his beautiful face. Bhishma gave away his life. Who will not fall for such death? Mother Ladini. I just tell you short, she was such a great devotee. She was doing lot of services. She was always attached to the Lord. She was always on the backside. She never came in front to do any big services in front of others. Everybody knew it as this very gentle, humble, simple lady who was doing services. She never spoke loudly to anybody. But she was staying and preaching in South Africa. Because of the communal rights, some terrorists attacked the temple. They made stand, they got all the devotees out and they made them stand in a line. They said, all ladies and children on side. She along with other ladies were on side. And all the males were there. They took out gun and then wanted to shoot one devotee. They shot one devotee in front of her. And that was it. She said, stop it. You can't do this. They are devotees of the Lord. And everybody was surprised. This lady never spoke a word. She was so mild. And now, in this time of fear, so much of fearful situation, when she's actually saved, right? She's on side. She's not to be killed. She speaks so loudly. And they said, mind your business or you are also gone. She said, never mind. Instead of seeing this devotee is being dead in front of me, I rather die first instead of seeing them. So if you want to kill anybody of them first you shoot me. And the next gunshot was on her. She gave away her body. This is a devotee's life. But she, do you think that her life was a failure? Actually, you can say that at a young age she died. But what a better life. In service of a devotee, you are giving up your life. And that is the glory of it. So each one has to die. But Lord sees to that even if the devotees die, they have a glorious death. Right? And that's not a failure. Finally, it brings us to conclusion. Lord can fail. If we do not cooperate with him, we offend devotees. But he never fails to protect his devotees. We have the example of Pandavas. Prahlad Maharaj. Actually open the scriptures and you will have hundreds of examples. I'm just telling one or two. Gajendra, Draupadi. Right? Draupadi was calling out to Lord. But before that, when she was calling, she was first calling everybody else, please help me, please help me. Yes. Nobody could help her. Then she was trying to hold the sari with her own hands. When she couldn't hold the sari with her own hand, she let it go and she was holding it in her teeth. She's still depending on her own strength. And when she realized she cannot have anything now left with her strength, nothing can be done. She gave away completely and completely took shelter and she started saying, oh Mukunda, oh Gopala, oh Govinda, please save me. And immediately Lord sent a huge length of sari which protected her. So, after so long, Magendra Prabhu was back.
Yes.
Welcome back. So Lord always protects his devotee. And that is what is important. His protection may not come in the way what we think from our side is a protection. But he protects whatever is the best required for that person at that time. So his protection may not come always to protect your body and always to keep you alive. It may be in different ways. But he will always do whatever is best in your interest and will protect that. He never fails to reciprocate with his devotees. Gone are the old stories when you say that, oh Lord, I want to do something and Lord did for you. Ask in today's time. Those who are serving the Lord in various ways, they have so many examples of Lord's reciprocation. Nimai Prabhu had a very nice reciprocating. We could feel when he puts the video with Jagannath on Facebook, those who have seen, somebody has seen, right? You could feel that Lord was happy basically taking and so much of loving exchange between them. They had taken Lord's picture so beautifully, everything was so nice. Tumpa and Nimai Prabhu were like worshipping Lord as well. And I'm sure they must have felt also so happy about it, right? They told that, oh, they're feeling, why is it going? Each one of us, we will have a reciprocation. When we pray to Lord, we all have our experiences in life. No exceptions. The time when you have prayed to him sincerely, he answers. He always answers. Answer may not be what we want all the time. But at that time, after some time, when you go back and look in your life, you know it was the best at that time what could have happened to you. The failures, seemingly, will bring you closer to your ultimate destination. And that failure is Lord's gift to you. And all of us have to learn to accept that gift in life. You all know about Kubja? When Krishna, when he went to Mathura, when he was brought to Mathura to kill Kamsa, obviously Kamsa wanted to kill him, but finally he ended up killing Kamsa. When he was going towards the palace of Kamsa, one very, very ugly looking lady, her name was Kubja. Kubja word only means ugly. She approached Krishna with a bowl which had got sandalwood pulp. And she had desired that, oh, Krishna is so attractive. I wish I can have him. But obviously it was too much to ask. So he went and asked Krishna, can I at least put this little bit of chandan on your face? And then in her heart she desired that he is really very handsome. And I wish, you know, I can spend some time with him. And Krishna, understanding her innermost desire, though she never expressed, Krishna allowed her to apply the chandan on her, on his face. And then he took her face by chin. And in a minute, she was actually having hunchback. And then he straightened. And immediately she became a very beautiful lady. And then, not only that, Krishna went. Krishna told that, now I have got some mission. Mission is to kill Kamsa. But when I finish that, I will come back to you. And after killing Kamsa, he did go to Kubja and spent a day with her, talking to her, making her feel happy and wanted. This is what is Lord. He is ready to make each one of us feel wanted because he really wants us. He really wants us. It's just that we have to have faith that he is happy to have us. It's just that we have to decide whether we are happy to have him. And last days, he's always happy, or he never fails to fulfill the desire of his devotees. What we saw in Bhishma's condition. Bhishma said, either you break your vow or you fulfill my desire. Krishna said, so be it. So when we have sincere desires, Lord will never fail to protect or fulfill it. So mind you, please have sincere, good desires. I was just now when I'm talking to you, I'm realizing that in 2006, when I came to Singapore first time to give my exams, just today only I was realizing that actually. I was staying with some devotee who was in Bukit Panjang area. And then when the bus would take turn, I would see that huge written thing there, Bukit Panjang. And I was like, oh, so beautiful. So people must be here so happy, na? So nicely done. And today I'm staying there. I know, like today only morning I was thinking, I don't think I asked for it, but I maybe just had the slim glimpse of that. Just looking at the big written Bukit Panjang, oh my God. Same thing, when I passed by Kekki Hospital, it looks so beautiful from outside. I said, wow, it must be so happy for people to work in such nice hospital. So here it is. So I come here. I was now only after so many years, I think back that maybe that time when I was passing, but I remember very clearly, distinctly remember that I did appreciate Kekki Hospital, this Bukit Panjang. And after coming to Singapore for 5 years, now I'm in Bukit Panjang. So this is what I see. I'm not saying I'm the pure devotee, sorry. But I'm saying is that we should think what desires we have. I need not have maybe desire for those things unnecessarily. I'm suffering. But let's come to the point that let's have sincere desire to finally have deep faith in Lord to please Him, to serve His pure devotees, and He will surely help us to bring us to that also. So Lord seemingly fails. He doesn't actually fail. He seemingly fails only if we do not cooperate, if we offend devotees, or if it is actually not good what we ask for our own life. He knows, and after some time he will say, I'm sorry, but if you ask poison for yourself, I love you so much, I cannot give you poison. And so if he fails to fulfill some of our desires or something which we feel is not done, it's for our own good for sure. So who will be that person who will not fall for such a Lord, who is ready to fall for us unfailingly? He never fails to fall for us, to protect us, to always give us shelter if we give our heart to Him. It is now on us. The what you call in our language, the ball is in our court now. Whether we want to have Him with us completely or no. So we should have full faith that He will never not let us down. And one message, take home, never offend devotees. Otherwise, we will be like Durva Samuni, running for our life, cannot help. Any questions? or any other realizations, or as Devaki Nandan Prabhu asked, any wild objections?
What is battle of offenses in the last?
Yeah, offenses are like you are doing aparad to a Vaishnavite devotees. So never offend a devotee. You don't know which is a pure devotee coming your way. So best is to just serve them and not offend them. Any other questions? No questions? Yes, Devan.
This question is, during the King Amrish, I think, Ekadasi, right? So what's the meaning of those fasting and all those things in our life?
Actually, Lord writes also in this very clearly when he's saying that austerities has no meaning when it comes to loving Lord, right? If mother says, I'm going to fast today, do entire day puja, and that's good for my child, but she doesn't feed the child, then what is the use of that austerity? Similarly, what Lord wants from us is only love. But to express your love, if you want to do austerities along with it, saying that by doing austerities, you always attract some pious karmas, not the love of God. You just attract the pious karmas. But he was doing it on the top of his devotional services. I told you that he always used to like use his hands for washing the temple of the Lord, use his legs for. So he was completely engaged in the services, and austerity was one of the extra added feather on his devotional life. Austerity without devotion is zero. It might take you to some higher pious activities, but Lord is not pleased, or he doesn't give himself. Okay, right, the same example. Then the wife says, I'm going to do fasting so that my husband lives for 100 years. But I'm not going to cook for next 7 days, and you do what you want. Then he will say, what type of this love is, right? Loving service is important. Along with that, if you're doing your extra things, it's okay. So Amrish Maharaj was very clear about it. And that's what we are also expected to do. More important is love the Lord. Serve him. Austerities you want to do? No. Don't want to do?
Seems extracurricular activities.
Yeah. Extracurricular
activities. Can I add to that something?
Yeah.
In my opinion and what I know is, when we do upvas, has got a symbolic meaning to itself. Ishopanishad starts with Ishavasim idam sarvam jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena bhunjita, which means if you want to attain something, you should first know to renunciate it. Be it wealth. You see, you don't drink water for 3 hours and then you drink a drop of water. You understand, appreciate the quality, the what?
The need of
water. Yes, need. You are away from your parents for 3 years and then you see your parents, you realize how nourishing your parents are, what does it. So these are worldly things. So it's just a symbolism that when you give up something, then you realize the meaning of it. And it's across all religions. Even Ramzan also is based on the same principle in that way. So that is why the upvas whole point comes. And I think
even the
medically also
the
it might have a
it's good to keep your stomach empty.
Liquid diet is good sometimes.
Now
yeah.
Actually, even if you don't go don't go religious wise, this those who are very health conscious, every once in 1 week they do 1 day of
liquid,
they will eat
diet.
Non-cooked food. This detoxification process they call it,
yes.
Right? They will eat only the sprouts or vegetables or fruit, but they will not eat anything which is cooked. That is called detoxification. So finally, this is a detoxification along with some pious activities. Very important thing with this is that whenever you do any of this austerity or any of this thing like this, you are doing what, as he said, that you are withdrawing from that and but giving your more attention and time to the devotional service that day. To explain, if I am doing fasting, I'm sorry, I'm not going to go into naming anything like that, but there are people those who will do without water for 5 days, 6 days, 7 days. I've seen them personally. I cannot do it. I appreciate their control. But then what do they do? After 3rd day, your body becomes so weak, you're just sitting on sofa or lying down and watching TV. I cannot move.
Exactly.
They're watching TV, but they're doing watching movie. Better don't do. Better eat and then pray to Krishna. Correct. So that is very important. Austerity, that's what I said. Austerity without devotion is zero, no meaning. But when we do austerity, like on Ekadashi, when suppose you want to fast, the intention is, obviously you give some rest to your body, and that day, instead of cooking for yourself 2 times a day, wasting that much of time, that day do more of devotional services. You read more, you do more chanting. So there will be a lot of people, I have seen, come across that on Ekadashi, they will do instead of 16 rounds, they will do 25 rounds. Do extra devotional activities. So that's what finally, whatever brings you to love Krishna or Supreme Lord more, that should be done. May it be austerity or more austerity. Yeah.
The two cases you mentioned where Lord failed, I think it was not failing, rather it was means to attain a purpose. Like in the first case, it was to kill the Kauravas, and second case, it was to kill Ravan.
Yeah.
So it was a means to.
At the end of it, not two cases, all the cases, Lord seems to fail in eyes of some people only, those who want to argue. Comes from envy. Like, I tell you that Lord, as she said in the beginning, how can Lord fail? Lord doesn't fail. But he seemingly fails, or he takes failure sometimes for higher purpose. No doubt about it. He, that's why, it's not that he desires that. Finally, that is what he desires that. He cannot not get what he desires. Actually, what he desires is done. It's done. And that's what he told Arjuna, that I desire to kill this entire army, and actually they are dead. He showed them everybody actually entering in his mouth as a Vishwarupa, right? You don't have to. I don't depend on you to kill them. I can also kill them. It's just that I'm giving you glory if you want. Right? So if you remember in the beginning of Kurukshetra war, during Bhagavad Gita, he showed his vision and he said, all these people are dead already. Nimitta matra bhava sabhe sachi. But what I'm telling you to do is become an instrument if you want. Don't want, sacrifice. So similarly, in the beginning of Kurukshetra war, right? In the first chapter of Gita, if you see, there are signs of victory of Pandavas is there. Right? Religious against irreligious. What is going to win? It's obvious. Common sense. Right? So it was a fixed match. Match fixing. Correct? Similarly, in this yuga, when we all are also there, the match is fixed. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has fixed the match. He has already told that my name and my glories will be sung in every town and village. And if you open your eyes and see, every town and village, even the corners of South Africa, I'm sometimes amazed when I read about them, even those tribal people, somehow the glories of the names of Lord is reaching, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has already done the prophecy. So it is on our side, whether we want to join his gang or he doesn't want to join the gang. The match is fixed. He's going to do it anyways. Whether you want to join or not join, that's in our hand. So it's like, if you know which party is going to win, better to be on that side, right? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's party is already going to win. Krishna's party is always, Lord's party always wins, to be on the religious side. Yes, Prabhu.
How do you exactly define a Vaishnava offense? Because sometimes an act of ignorance or a selfless act may be taken in some perspective as an offense. So how do you
offense? It's a Vaishnava offense is a huge topic in itself. That will start with who is a Vaishnava and then what is an offense, right? Safety purpose. Rupa Goswami says, anybody who is serving Lord, anybody who is chanting should be taken and treated from your side as a Vaishnava. Okay? Offense. Offense can be done willingly or knowingly or unknowingly. Knowingly done, definitely dead. Unknowingly, offenses, does it help? Does it hurt us? Yes. Unknowingly, if I put my hand in a fire, or child says, I did not know it's going to burn. Does it burn or no? It burns. Yeah? Similarly, the Lord understands. He always sees if your intentions were correct. But if it used, as you are saying, if the other person takes it, but it was not what it means to be, Lord is very fair. He's not partial. He will protect you. But unknowingly also, if you end up doing an aparad, which we understand that we offended somebody, then only solution is go back and tell that person, I'm sorry. If you go into detail, even when you see your devotee and then you're not happy at your heart in your office, sometimes we are just neutral or we are not happy or we don't want to appreciate somebody. That is also an offense, but that's too much into depth. You need not go into those things. The important thing is that a person who is a devotee of God, he thinks that every person is a son or child of God. And I'm the most insignificant. Who am I to offend devotee or others? They will not offend any jiva. They will not offend even the ant which is going on the street. Right? And that is what is best stand to take, which Murugari was taking, right? He did not want to even hurt the ants going on the castle. What is the importance of these ants? You know, like and what he was going to do, what Murugari was going to running, he was doing. That time you all know the story? He was a hunter. I'll end with this now. The Murugari was a hunter And he was not only killing the animals, he was half killing them. Sadistic pleasure. That when he would see them struggling for their life, bleeding, and then die, he would feel happy to see them. He could just kill them, right? He was a hunter, he could have just killed them. That was not, it was not sufficient for him. He would half kill them and let them die with so much of pain. And when he was met by Narada Muni, and when Narada Muni actually advised him, he took up devotion like this. He said, okay, I will start chanting the Lord's name. And then there is a full story how he came to that realization. But he immediately gave it up. He started chanting. And then he was wondering, how am I going to be maintaining myself and my family? This is my family business. I cannot stop it, right? So, as soon as he started chanting Lord's name, slowly, slowly, and initially, obviously, it was very difficult for him to maintain himself. Almost like a fasting, not much food to eat, whatever is dropping from some of the trees and all he would have. But slowly, his glories or his good qualities started spreading, and people knew that, oh, there is somebody who has become so nice sage, you know, so they would come and give him food and milk and everything. And then he realized that he did not have to hunt for maintaining his family. The maintenance is done by operator, right? That is the Lord. He operates, he maintains. And then now when his life is now devoted to Lord, after some time, this Narad Muni gets his friend, Parbat Muni, and says, come, I will show you how one hunter has become Lord's devotee. So they both are coming that side. And as soon as Murugari sees Narad Muni, he is his guru, right? He's the person who gave him this knowledge to change his life for a better. So he's running to give him and paying obeisances and respect to him. But then he stops. He sees some ants crawling on the road, on the way. And he could have said, big deal about it. A few ants here and there doesn't make a difference. That my guru is here, I need to pay obeisances. But what did he do? He stopped. With his clothes, he gently took them aside, made them safe, and then he paid his obeisances. This was the same person who did not mind killing animals and was happy killing them half, now was not able to kill even an ant. And this is because of two things. First, association of a pure devotee like Narada. And secondly, following his instruction of chanting the holy name. So nobody can say, I'm hopeless or somebody's hopeless, right? If he can become devotee and if his life can be changed, we can also have some hope in our life. Okay, can we stop here now?
Since every day, then I'm doing nothing. I can remember one thing that God's really can tell in prison scenario. If you put God in Indian government, everybody will fail. Thanks so much for that.
Okay, for those who are not getting the mails, I would just share that I'm sure all of you know about Janmashtami or Gopalashtami. We all celebrate Krishna's birthday, which was a month ago. We celebrated it very large scale in Khalsa. Some of you also must have come there. So this Sunday is birthday of his better half, Radharani. And she is the greatest of devotee of Krishna. It is said that if Radharani says Krishna that this person you please accept and give him devotion and shelter, he will never refuse, even if we are the most fallen. So what we need to do is just butter Radharani. Just become her devotee. Then she will take care. And she is so soft-hearted like a mother. It's very difficult to convince father sometimes, right? They are little stricter. But mothers are very soft-hearted, right? It's very easy to put out them, right? It's very easy to get their favor. It's natural. She is the mother of devotion. So we pray to her. And when she is happy by just simple devotion of a devotee, what she tells Krishna, please favor this devotee. This devotee is even better than me. This is what she says to Krishna. And definitely Krishna cannot refuse her plea. So she is a great hope for us, and her birthday is coming on Sunday. So anybody who would like, we are going to have celebration in Gauranga Center, 13 Cuff Road, Little India, morning 10 o'clock to 12:30, followed by feast. So everybody is invited to her birthday party.